Tomorrow night on ESPN, top-ranked boxing returns with rising star and WBO featherweight champion Shakur Stevenson in the main event. The first of four big nights of boxing in 7 days begins tomorrow night, 7 Eastern, on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. And as we approach 9 a.m. Eastern time in the United States, I'm Mike Greenberg. This is Get Up on ESPN. We are in Bristol, Connecticut this morning. It is a very busy day. I will start this hour by taking you through four different pieces of the story that we are developing through the weekend about the role that sports plays in the middle of conversation about racial equality in the United States. During this weekend, the National Football League found itself in the middle of it. We'll talk about that. Then one of our guys, as we turn our attention to other sports, talking about the Texas football team and the double standards there and a small group of players that could change everything and why it is so important for young players to be speaking out on the issues during this time and why some of them may find themselves with a voice they had not previously anticipated. All that and more as we get up with you in this hour. It starts with this. In a video posted to Twitter on Friday night, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell admitted the league was wrong in how it dealt with player protests of police brutality and systemic racism over the past few years. The video came in response to a series of requests put forth by more than a dozen star players in a video message to the NFL. Here was more from Goodell's response.
We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people. We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the National Football League, believe Black Lives Matter. I personally protest with you and want to be part of the much needed change in this country. Without black players, there would be no National Football League. And the protests around the country are emblematic of the centuries of silence, inequality, and oppression of black players, coaches, fans, and staff. We are listening. I am listening. And I will be reaching out to players who have raised their voices and others on how we can improve and go forward for a better and more united NFL family.
That was Friday early evening. Later that night, Drew Brees responded to being called out in a way by President Trump. And on Instagram, this is what he wrote. Through my ongoing conversations with friends, teammates, and leaders in the black community, I realize this is not an issue about the American flag. It has never been. We can no longer use the flag to turn people away or distract them from the real issues that face our black communities. We did this back in 2017, and regretfully, I brought it back with my comments this week. We must stop talking about the flag and shift our attention to the real issues of systemic racial injustice, economic oppression, police brutality, and judicial and prison reform. We are at a critical juncture in our nation's history. If not now, then when? As the weekend continued, the Saints Malcolm Jenkins and many other players and coaches across the NFL took part in many protests. Among them were Broncos head coach Vic Fangio, who, of course, himself had made controversial comments last week. He joined his players, while Falcons head coach Dan Quinn also joined a protest. And then, last night, perhaps you were sleeping, it was right around midnight, President Trump tweeted the following. Could it be even remotely possible that in Roger Goodell's rather interesting statement of peace and reconciliation, he was intimating that it would now be okay for the players to kneel or not to stand for the national anthem, thereby disrespecting our country and our flag? So that's just a smattering of the things that have happened in and around the world of sports since last we were together on Friday, and we have our group together here. Dominic is with us, Lewis Riddick, and Jay Williams. Lewis, I'll start with you again this hour. As we discussed earlier, we've now heard from almost everyone connected to the National Football League. We heard from the league office at the very top, from Roger Goodell. We've heard from players. We've heard from coaches. We've heard from team executives. We've not heard from individual, or not heard much from individual team owners. How important is that in this going forward?
It's absolutely critical. And look, you know, I'm someone who has definitely been talking about the fact that we need to start to quickly transition away from making, well, not away from making statements, but quick transition from making statements to really taking sustainable action. Well, the owners haven't even really made statements, period. They haven't really let their feelings be known as far as how much they condemn, to what degree they're willing to support, to what degree they're really willing to take action and support their partners, not their employees, but their partners, they being the players of the National Football League. And I think that's what we're all waiting to see. Are they going to be influenced as much by the bottom line as they were previously? Are they going to take, you know, adopt the doctrine of it's bad for business in order to kneel during the national anthem because they feel as though there is a loud, you know, portion of the fan base that is going to react negatively? And, you know, Dan Graziano alluded to this in the previous hour, the fact that, and I know this that happened to football teams, that there were, you know, parts of their season ticket holder fan base and people who had premium seats and who had suite contracts who were, you know, threatening to not show up, threatening not to renew suite contracts, threatening not to buy merchandise, and really making it tough on the different National Football League clubs. And now I think it's important to hear where owners stand. There's no question about that. Players are waiting to hear where owners stand. Roger Goodell in the league office has made it their point to go out and back the players and admit the fact that they were wrong, although they still have not addressed the issue of Colin Kaepernick, which is really a big part of this entire issue. But the owners need to make a statement. They need to say something, whether it be individually or collectively, because we haven't heard a thing. And as I said before, the longer you take, the longer you wait, the more people are going to question the authenticity of your statement when eventually it comes, whether that be individually or collectively. And credibility is something that is awful important right now, because it isn't just enough to make a statement. Your credibility is on the line now, and rightfully so, because this isn't just a statement issue. This is a human rights issue. This is a mankind issue. And so this shouldn't be that hard, but we'll see.
Dominique, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that it absolutely needs to be individual statements. They all need to come out and speak. And I think I had a conversation with Mina Kimes over the weekend where we were talking about how Roger Goodell always is this meat shield for the owners. Like, he steps out there and we all tell him how terrible he is. When in actuality, Roger Goodell's power comes from the owners. So they throw him out there so we can yell at him to avoid us yelling at them. So I think as media members, and Mina made this point, we need to go around them. Like, we need to go around Roger. We know who they are. We should call them out, because Lewis is right. Right now, they need to speak to their credibility and their integrity and admit where they've made mistakes and talk about what they're going to do to create solutions going forward. And I don't necessarily think that the climate is the same. I understand there's a potential that, or they did, they were kind of against the kneeling in the past because they thought that's where the money was. I'm not sure the money is there anymore. I think a lot of people bought into the doctrine that that Drew Brees believed just a week ago, that what they were doing was disrespect. But I don't think that the rest of the country feels that way. Drew went through it, so y'all don't have to go through it. And now everyone understands. I think most people understand. And most of the population, a large portion of the population, would be in support of players doing a silent protest, or excuse me, a peaceful protest going forward. I don't think the money is on the other side anymore.
And that, or before we get to all of that, just what was your reaction to Goodell doing what he did? Because to your point, he is the one who frequently has taken the slings and arrows, if you will, for the owners. And in this case, he made it clear he's not doing it. He took a side.
Yeah, no, I appreciate him doing that. But I do think that Roger, like, it's safe now. Like, Roger, we would have liked that from you. Where was you at when it was going on at the beginning? We would have liked that from you before. And right now it feels like you kind of had to. I'm happy. And everyone I've talked to inside the league office and around the league has always said that Roger wanted Colin back in the league. Roger is part of the reason why there are pushes to improve the Rooney Rule or to increase diversity or black coaches and general managers. Everyone I've talked to said Roger is an ally in that way, but he doesn't come out necessarily and say it because of who he works for. So it felt like to me that maybe this was an opportunity. This freed Roger up to say the things that he wanted to say, because it feels like the public has changed so drastically from where they were before.
Jay, Will, obviously you didn't play in the NFL, but I'm really interested to hear your perspective on this conversation.
Yeah, I agree with Dom. I think the public sentiment has changed, which has allowed Roger Goodell to pivot. And, you know, ultimately, this is a strategic business move for them in their brand. I think this is a little bit more complex. I think this has been politicized and weaponized. And I think we have to separate the two. You know, we talked about this is a human rights issue. This is a mankind issue. This is not a political issue. The two are like this. They're running their separate courses. And I think allowing this to be politicized has put a lot of owners in unique positions where some of those relationships have a chance to be compromised. And, you know, I agree with Dom about having people come out and make comments on this. And imagine this, Greeny and guys. Imagine if this 4 years ago, if we were able to compartmentalize that, you know, kneeling about police brutality as opposed to making this about the flag. Imagine how this, what light this would have put the NFL in. for a league that is 70% African-American, where they would be right now if they had doubled down behind the players, where they would be behind the players with how this whole energy has shifted and changed. They were already one of the most powerful entities in the world. It would have made them the most powerful.
So I want to put the quotes up here from Adrian Peterson, if I can. Guys, do we still have those? These are Adrian Peterson in the Houston Chronicle this weekend. He said, just 4 years ago, you're seeing Kaepernick taking a knee, and now we're all getting ready to take a knee together going into the season without a doubt. When he was asked by the newspaper if he again planned to take a knee, he said, yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. I want to make sure I'm clear, Dominique, on where you stand on this, which is to say, do you believe that the reaction to that, if that is indeed the case, will be markedly different than it was 4 years ago?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know who could feel like the line hasn't moved. I think that most people will applaud that. And I think most players, I might go so far as to say most players in the league will actually go ahead with that demonstration. And it's a pro and a con. I think the solidarity that it shows is great. But the fact that it doesn't upset anybody, like, that's the point of the protest, to make people uncomfortable. So some players will have to figure out a way to take it another step forward to continue to push this cause. But I do think many players, if not most players, will at least once show some sort of gesture towards this movement, because it has taken over this country and it's taken over this league. And what Colin stood for, I think a lot of people who didn't understand it before have come around. And I think that most of the players and the coaches understand where they should stand now. I'm not so sure about the people who own the teams. And I think I just leave you with the Dr. King quote that I brought up last week, is that the hottest place in hell is reserved for those who remain silent in times of moral conflict. So I think they should think about that while they have this opportunity to speak up or just sit on the sidelines with tape over their mouths.
Lewis, what do you expect to see here?
Yeah, I really don't know, Granny. I think, you know, Jay made some great points and Dom did it as well. I think really right now, you know, the owners are quite honestly, you know, they're making a risk assessment. They quite honestly are, because you know Jay put it really well when he said this. Look, there's the human rights path to this, and then there's the part that has been politicized and weaponized, as he put, which are great ways to characterize this. And they are looking at it, I think, in both arenas. You know, even if they want to get behind the players, which they should want to get behind the players, that should not even be a question. That's one thing. But they're looking at, they see what they're up against. They see I shouldn't say what they're up against. They see what the pushback is going to be from certain segments of the population and certain people who want to take this opportunity to go ahead and politicize this issue and try to make it difficult on them. The question is whether or not they feel as though, as it's been already articulated, has the line moved enough to where they go, okay, you know what, individually and collectively, we're going to make strong statements about the fact that we are behind the players and they are our partners. I don't know how they're going to fall on this. I think that is the million-dollar question. That's what we're all here to find out.
Go ahead, Dominique.
They should be honest with themselves, though. Like, be true to who you are. I don't understand why they need to be concerned about upsetting people when something as significant as this is going on. Like, I would understand that if there was a secretary who didn't want to upset her boss. Like, how much money do you need to be free? How much leverage and flexibility do you need to stand up for what's right? Like, they have no bosses. There is no one who can do anything with them. They are billionaires. Do what's right because it's right, not because you're trying to make a buck. You don't need any more. Your house can't get any bigger. You don't need another plane or helicopter or yacht. Like, be free, be honest, and be truthful in this moment. Don't come out and say it because you think it's right or because you think it's going to sell tickets or appease your players. Say it because you have the luxury to be able to say and do the things that are important in this moment. Because can't nobody do nothing to you? They can take things from me. They can take things from your employees. They can't take nothing from you. Be honest and be true to who you are and be true to what you believe in.
Lewis and Dom, I just want to
say, I couldn't agree with you more.
Jay Williams, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say real quick, I couldn't agree with him more.
Go ahead, Jay. Finish up.
The next 4 months, guys, you are going to be forced to take a side here. You're going to be forced. Think about all these sports that we have coming back. MLB trying to come back, NBA with the playoffs, NFL looming around, MLS. You have all these sports. You're going to have the biggest platform in the world. And so regardless, this is going to be a moment where either you're going to allow it to be politicized, weaponized, or you're going to stand here. And the people that are deciding to allow it to be politicized, weaponized, they're going to be called out. This has nothing to do with politics. This is about human rights.
This conversation is not ending. It's just beginning. Guys, that's extremely well said. Thank you all for that. We'll take a short break on that thought. We have much more to do as we continue this morning. Patrick Mahomes, the best quarterback in football, one of its biggest stars. why his voice right now is so incredibly significant in and outside of the world of sports. And then on the floor, while the NBA resuming is great news, Zion Williamson might have a different problem. We'll explain that as well as we continue. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Back on Get Up and on the floor. Last Friday, the NBA Player Association approved the NBA's 22-team format to complete this season, scheduled to start July 31st. And our reporting over the weekend that teams with winning percentage will determine the order in the ultimate playoff standings. And the reporting is really detailed and it's really specific, and it got a little confusing. So we thought we'd bring Zach Lowe into the conversation here along with Jay Will to explain specifically why this is bad news for Zion Williamson and the Pelicans. As you explain the reality of this circumstance here, this does not bode well for those of us who want to see Zion in the playoffs. Zach.
Well, look, I mean, this is a one-time-only international emergency, right? So not everything's going to be perfect. And one of the imperfections is that with each team playing 8 regular season games, teams are going to finish with different numbers of total games played. And just by the luck of the draw, Portland has played 2 more games than New Orleans and Sacramento. And they went 1-1 in those 2 extra games. And that means their winning percentage is 1/1,000th of a point higher than those 2 teams. So if they all tie, or 2 of those teams tie, or one of them, Zion, ties with Portland, Portland wins. So really, short story, New Orleans has to outplay the Blazers by a full game, win one more of those 8 games than Portland does to hop over them and get a shot at most likely Memphis.
Yes. There's a lot riding on that. A, Zion is a huge star. B, I have a suit bet going with Jalen Rose, so I'm rooting very hard for the Pelicans.
So do myself. I, Greening. So yeah. Do I over here.
And so, Jay, will you tell me they're going to come back off of this, as Zach just pointed out, unprecedented circumstance. They're going to play 8 games in 16 days. They're going to be back-to-backs. There's going to be all of this stuff in it. How would you manage Zion and his playing time when they were already being careful with him the last time?
Well, a lot of that would depend upon what Zion Williamson's workout regimen has been during this pandemic. And you hope that it's been at a next level, but I don't know what access to facilities that he had. If, you know, facilities down in New Orleans were shut down for a stint, if he was working on his own, you would assume that he has. And I think another caveat on top of, you know, what we were just talking about as it relates to this, guys, is that as it relates to the Pelicans, look, they had one of the easiest remaining schedules in the league. So now when you've taken out the bottom third of the league in which they had those games against, now you're making them compete against teams that were in the upper echelon of the league, which is going to make it a lot more challenging for a team that had a different pathway before this whole thing even went down.
That's right. Exactly. All of the teams that are at the very bottom of this thing got taken out of the mix entirely. As Zach said, there is no perfect way to solve all of this, so they're doing the best they can. Zach Lowe, what was your reaction to Kevin Durant saying definitively he's not coming back to play?
That it's nice to have some clarity so that we don't have to ask this question or hear this question asked and Sean Marks has to answer it every week. I mean, every time that this topic has been brought up, I don't think so. It's extremely unlikely. Everyone's couching it as best they can. 99.9, he's not playing. Now he's not playing. We know we can just move on. Brooklyn's year is next year. They have a lot of decisions to make. Next year is a hugely important year for them. But this year we can kind of put to bed the idea that they're going to suddenly become a contender.
Jay Will, what did you think of it?
Yeah, I think Kevin's always been in a stance that he wasn't going to play. I think at this juncture of the season, to have him come back to be implemented into a system with players he hasn't played before, who knows, you know, what the outcome of Kyrie would be if he were going to play or not. I think there were just too many questions with these amount of games and this condensed time period. you know, as opposed to if he were playing USA basketball, he could play a game, take a couple days off, maybe participate in practice, really take his own time and getting inserted back into the equation. So next year is going to be the year for Brooklyn.
Yeah, jumping right back essentially into the playoffs, a mad dash through these eight games in the playoffs probably would have been too risky. Quickly, Zach, because you're the kind of person who looks into this sort of thing, is there a reason to believe that there is an advantage or a disadvantage to any team based upon anything you've seen? Scheduling, health and conditioning, opportunities for facilities? Where are the advantages in this thing?
You know, no one is going to know. And even to Jay Will's point about New Orleans having some of its easy games wiped off, that's actually not really true. I think they only lose one game against a bottom-feeding team. Their next 8 or 10 games were going to be anyway against teams that were in like the 6 to 8 spot in the 8th seed race. So they're going to have an easy schedule regardless. I think it's going to be the teams that have had a chance to get healthy, right? Ben Simmons is healthy. Kemba Walker is likely healthy. Giannis was suffering from knee injury. So they've gotten some benefit. And then it's going to kind of be, you know, all the sports science people are maybe worried about like a hamstring here, a hamstring there from the fast ramp up. And whoever's kind of lucky enough to avoid those or whatever it is, then they're going to have a little bit of a leg up, I guess. We'll see. This is all brand new.
Yeah, but I know that, Jay Will, there's a couple of players in particular you have your eyes on as far as conditioning is concerned.
Jokic has lost a lot of weight, but there's a lot of questions. I just want to say before, you know, not getting into particular names here, Greeny, but you know, for the past 2.5 months, this is going to be playoff madness. This is going to be one of the most interesting playoffs that the world has ever seen. We don't know who's been working out. People have been having a lot of wine. Guys have been hanging out, spending time with their family. Guys haven't had access to gyms. It's going to be a question of, you know, can you ramp up in this amount of time? Essentially, guys are coming off an offseason to be thrown right back into the playoffs. That's why this is going to be challenging.
Yes, and one during which they weren't sure they were going to be asked to come back and play up until pretty recently. Great, guys. Thank you so much. And we'll have much more NBA as we work our way towards the start of that season. But coming up next, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. They are the present and they are the future of the NFL. And right now, a very important position. We'll talk about why in a moment. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Back on Get Up, and in a video posted to Twitter on Friday night, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell admitted the league was wrong in how it dealt with player protests of police brutality and systemic racism over the past few years. That video came in response to a series of requests put forth by more than a dozen star players in a video message to the league. Here was a portion of Goodell's response.
We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest.
We played that entire message a little earlier in the hour, and I want to get to this here. The undefeated labeled 2019 the year of the black quarterback, and that was before the season began. When you take a look at how the season played out, it most certainly was apt. It was a remarkable year for many, including Lamar Jackson, who was the league MVP in his second season. He set the quarterback rushing record and was the second ever unanimous MVP. And then Patrick Mahomes led the Chiefs to their first Super Bowl championship in more than 50 years. And in so doing, he was named Super Bowl MVP. He is the youngest player ever to win both regular season and Super Bowl MVP. And overall, black quarterbacks set combined single season records for starts, wins, passing yards, and touchdowns. And I'm delighted to bring not only Dominique back into the conversation, but senior NFL writer from the undefeated Jason Reed is back with us. Jason, good morning. And you have been at the head of the discussion of the year of the black quarterback in 2019. And so now as we look at it in the context of what has happened over the last few weeks, what was the impact of having both Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson involved in that video from the players last week?
Well, Greeny, it was enormous. We all know that this is a quarterback league. And Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson are two of the brightest young stars in this game. And quarterbacks are the most protected class in this league, and they dominate the discussion in this league, and they are the faces of this league. So with both of those young men, when they attached to that video project and gave a commitment that they were going to do that, it fundamentally changed the discussion in the NFL corridors of power, because you could not be opposed to what these young stars, these guys who are going to make these owners a lot of money over the next decade, 15 years, it just fundamentally changed the conversation.
Dominique?
Yeah, I do think that the quarterback is a different animal in this league, and they matter more than anybody else. As reluctant as I am to admit that as a defensive back, the quarterbacks move the needle. No one tunes in to watch defensive players or really that many offensive players. The numbers change when quarterbacks show up. The jerseys that are bought are quarterbacks. So when the most prominent quarterbacks are black and outspoken, and even the black quarterbacks who weren't in a video, many of them have been outspoken on social media about these issues. When they have an opinion, it matters. More. And I think that the owners in the league have to listen when the quarterbacks feel something, because they are the class, they're the stars. So if you think of this as a television property, those are the leading men. There's a reason why people tune in, is to see those guys. So I'm happy to see them taking their power and using it this way. And it's nice to see the NFL is responding to it, but I think more is expected.
Well, Jason, I'd be curious to get your perspective on a conversation we had at the beginning of this hour. The most prominent players in the NFL, to the point of this discussion, have now spoken loudly here. We've heard the league office from the very top of it. Roger Goodell has spoken loudly here. Many players, coaches, team executives. We have not heard from individual NFL owners, hardly at all. Where do you expect that to go?
Well, I do think that's going to come, but Green, let's remember that Roger Goodell is a very intelligent person. I mean, you know, no matter what people think about his leadership and things that have occurred, he is no dummy. He would not go out and put out a video that politically is going to bring so much of a firestorm on the league, that is going to do things that would make him have to answer to his bosses if he had not already answered to his bosses. Don't for one second think that Roger Goodell did not consult with the people he needed to consult with, because there's this tidal wave that's occurring in this country right now with regard to this reckoning we're having on race. And Roger Goodell understood, and he told his bosses, and I'm sure this, and part of this is my reporting, that the conversations were, we have to get ahead of this because this is coming.
Dominique?
It's too late. Too late to get ahead of it. They've been behind it for quite some time, so they have to catch up. So I do think that I also wanted to point out, when you were talking about the year of the black quarterback, that the number one overall pick, Kyler Murray, and probably front runner for the MVP in the coming season, is another black quarterback. And I do think that the idea that the power comes from them and they're going to speak, people will listen. But I don't know that. I mean, I understand and respect your reporting, Jason, and I'm sure that he checked with the owners that he needed to, but I'm not sure that he needs at this point. They have no real power over Roger Goodell at this point, if this is something that he feels strongly about, because I know that he wanted to get the last CBA out of the way before he had planned to kind of ride off into the sunset. And I think Roger's in a position, because I don't know if your reporting suggests this, but everyone that I talk to suggests that Roger has been on the right side of most of these race issues. He just hasn't felt that he had the latitude to speak out. And now, if he's done the CBA, he's in what is probably his last contract, what power do they have over him? If he feels like he needs to speak out and say something more aggressive, then I think that bodes well for him and his legacy going forward. So I'm not so sure that he is as intimidated by the people who run the league as he might have been in the past.
Jason?
Hey, Greeny, can I respond to that just for a quick second?
Of course.
I see what Fox is saying. And let me clarify what I'm saying, Fox. And I don't know if I did a very good job of that. When I say he checked with him, Roger's purpose, his job, is to make money for his owners. Right. So when I say that, you know, his position on this was not in terms of a cowering or a fearful thing, but he's doing what he thinks is in the best interest of the league. So I do think he based on my reporting, he did check with the appropriate people he needed to. And furthermore, when I talk about getting ahead of this thing, you're absolutely right, Fox. They've been on the wrong end overall. But when I say get ahead, I'm talking about the storm that's coming this season. The coronavirus pandemic, how it's disproportionately affected black people, the George Floyd situation, and a myriad of other issues. These players are going to protest this year. So the tidal wave he had to get ahead of is, there's nothing in the CBA that says they can't protest. This was going to come. So that's what he was trying to get ahead of.
Dominic, you got 15 seconds. You can finish it up.
Absolutely. I think that you're right. But it's interesting because his job is to make money for them. But it feels like right now the right thing to do to make money for them is to take the position that he took and maybe even take a more aggressive stance. So I think that you're right. I'm not disagreeing with you at all. He's doing what's best for the money right now. I'm suggesting that maybe he needs to step out and do what's best for society and probably what's best for his legacy and take a more strident stance and call on some of the owners individually to step out and do the same thing.
Neek, thank you. Jason Reed, good to see you again. It's a good pleasure. We'll see you again soon. Meanwhile, let everybody know that as the nation continues to come to grips with issues of race and injustice, tonight on ESPN, 3 hours of special programming from The Undefeated, starting at 8 Eastern with Dear Black Athlete. Then it's the debut of Playing for Justice, a special behind-the-scenes look at the criminal justice system through the eyes of NBA players. And finally, an encore presentation of An Undefeated Conversation, Athletes, Responsibility, and Violence. That's all tonight on ESPN and the ESPN app. Still ahead here, Texas Longhorns football in the state of Texas is extraordinarily important. And so, the coach's comments this weekend were as well. You'll hear them after this. Get up on ESPN.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Florida State football coach Mike Norvell apologized to his team after Marvin Wilson, a star defensive tackle, accused him of lying about personally connecting with each player to discuss the killing of George Floyd. After we discussed that, Desmond Howard brought up this issue Friday here on Get Up.
I believe that players are starting to see that the writing is on the wall. They are starting to realize that they're not powerless. For so long, the coaches, the administration, they had all of these players believing that they only had certain rights, their voices couldn't be heard on certain things, and that they couldn't make any money. Now that the players are starting to understand they can make money, or they're going to be able to make money on their name, image, and likeness, and that they have certain powers, I believe you're starting to wake up this sleeping giant. If you're going to be fair and just to your players and treat them accordingly, then you shouldn't have any concerns. You should be okay. But if you're going to treat them unfairly, then watch out, because now they understand they have avenues in which to get information out.
Fascinating from him. And then over the weekend, an anonymous ACC player told ESPN they're using us players for their entertainment, so we deserve a seat at the table, at the big table. Do we feel like we really have rights as athletes? As of right now, we don't have that. They want us to be quiet because they don't want the university to look bad, but it's too late. The whole country looks bad. And Jalen Rose is going to join us in a matter of moments. Jay Billis is with us here to begin this part of the conversation. What do you think of that, Jay? I feel like we've talked about what power and authority student athletes do and don't have over the course of time, but in completely different contexts. That was always in regards to whether or not they should be paid, to name, image, and likeness, and things like that. How about in this context?
Well, this context has made it more likely that players are going to be able to use their power with regard to other issues that, you know, name, image, and likeness pales in comparison and importance to what we're dealing with now and issues of systemic racism and police brutality in our society. But Greeny, the players that I know and that I see and that I talk to today are smarter and more socially aware than ever. And I think they realize the platform that they have and the opportunity to speak out that they have. But they have been operating in an environment where coaches, and it's not, I'm not sure it's anything sinister, and I don't want to suggest that, but where coaches have discouraged players from speaking out. And they've used terms like, well, we don't want this to be a distraction. Or they have social media bans, or they say, if we're going to do this, we have to do it as a team. As if you feel strongly about something and you want to speak out, that someone else on your team has veto power over your ability to do that because of your membership on that team. I look at colleges and universities, and I think most fair-minded people do, as marketplaces of ideas. And these players should be allowed and encouraged to speak out. But the problem is, this is entertainment. And just like with the NFL, they do not want division among their fan base. Like there are things where in this business, this multi-billion dollar business, there's a thought that this should be an escape from greater issues in society rather than being able to use this platform to point out those issues. And I do think you're going to see college athletes speak out more and more as we go forward, and you're going to see universities and coaches with less ability to be able to discourage them from speaking out, and that is a good thing.
Well, how would you imagine coaches who want... How would you imagine coaches handling this? You and I both know coaches tend to like to have control over everything. This is something over which they will not have control. How would you anticipate them handling that?
Well, first, I think you're seeing more coaches that are making an attempt to listen to their players as to what's important to them and what's important in society and the role of the athlete in making positive change. But Greeny, it's sort of the same thing. I mean, you're going to have coaches that are going to say, we have to do this as a team. And that's a consistent refrain that I hear all the time. And that has a discouraging element to it. And players in the past have felt, they felt reluctant to speak out or reluctant to use their platform because they're worried about, hey, could I lose my scholarship? Could there be retaliation from the coach or the coaching staff? Or if I decide to transfer over an issue, could my transfer be blocked? I think it's far more likely for a player to be able to speak out and be able to fight against that now in the current climate, because I don't think coaches are going to, and I don't want to say get away with it. I don't think that's going to be as useful of a discouraging tool as it has been in the past. I think players realize, and this could extend to name, image, and likeness, the fight over that, because I differ a little bit with Desmond Howard in that players aren't going to get name, image, and likeness rights. The NCAA is never going to do this voluntarily. They're already, I mean, you know what they've said. They've said, well, we want to give name, image, and likeness as long as it fits within the collegiate model. And that means they're not going to do it. Anything that the athletes get or any societal change is going to have to be taken. It is not going to be given.
I agree with that completely. Let me ask you, though, along the lines of the previous piece of the conversation, which is to say that one of the things we have seen as a result of the coronavirus pandemic is we've talked about the cataclysmic impact it would have on so many universities if they were to lose these sports. The loss of the NCAA basketball tournament, extraordinarily important financially. The loss of a college football season. We keep hearing all these doomsday scenarios. How much does that factor into the authority or the power or whatever word you want to attach to it that players find themselves with in the moment in sports, in college sports?
I don't know. I don't see the connection there, but I haven't given it a tremendous amount of thought. The idea of the current climate and the current financial situation that colleges and universities find themselves in, as all of society and really, really throughout the globe that businesses find themselves in. So this multi-billion-dollar business is having to make some adjustments, but I still think that you're going to see athletes realizing their powerful position. And I think the coaches and the universities are in a weaker position in discouraging them from speaking out on issues they find important.
That is fair. Jay, stay with me one second here. I want to put some quotes up on the screen, and then we'll talk a little bit about them here. This was in an interview with the Austin American-Statesman, and it is the head football coach at the University of Texas, Tom Herman, who said, quote, "There's a double standard, maybe a little bit. We're going to pack 100,000 people into DKR and millions watch on TV that are predominantly white. Not all of them, certainly, but most of them white. We're going to cheer when they score touchdowns, and we're going to hug our buddy when they get sacks or an interception. But we're going to let them date our daughter? Are we going to hire them in a position of power in our company? That's the question I have for America. You can't have it both ways. And if you're going to cheer them and love them for 3.5 hours this Saturday in the fall, you better have the same feelings for them off the field, because they're human beings. They deserve the same amount of respect and human rights that all of us do in this country when we agreed on the social contract to be a member of the United States." We're having a little trouble connecting to Jalen, and so we'll bring Dominique Foxworth back in here to contribute to this conversation here. Nick, as you hear those comments again from Tom Herman, we talked about them a bit earlier, but he's had some time to think about it. What thoughts do you have about the significance of the football coach at Texas saying that publicly?
Yeah, I think it's significant. It matters, but I do think that maybe the population of fans is not even as far along as Tom Herman suggests, because I don't think that they necessarily view the players as people, as much as they view them as objects there for their entertainment and to make them feel good about their universities. So I think they have a long way to go, but I think it's great that it gives people opportunity, or it gives them a suggestion that maybe they should do some self-reflection and explore how they really feel about these players and what they really think about these players. But I think the unfortunate thing is it's far too easy for those fans to just point at someone else and say, those are the racists. Those are the people who need to inspect themselves and assume that they have they're in a better place. And I just wanted to mention one other thing. And the question you asked before we went to the Tom Herman topic was about player power. And I do think that it may impact the way that they attack issues that face them in NCAA, because they are now seeing how strong they really are and how much power they have when they can act collectively.
Yeah, that's something we can continue to discuss. But Jay Billis, I'd be curious to hear, what was your reaction to what Tom Herman said?
Well, I agreed wholeheartedly with the sentiment but one thing that I would not differ with, but just point out, is I don't look at it using the term double standard. It's a question of systemic racism. And we've been talking about, and rightfully so, the issue of police brutality and disparate treatment in the justice system for African Americans. I mean, so I don't look at it, if a fan decides not to cheer, then that's okay, you know, because it's not a double standard. You're not being hypocritical. Look, these players are seen by fans mostly as entertainers. They go to watch them play and largely don't care about their views. They only care about their views when their views agree with theirs. And, you know, look, I think Tom Herman said all the right things there. But the issue is, we need to take action collectively and individually against systemic racism in our society. It is not just the people you cheer for or those you don't cheer for. It is much, much bigger than that, I believe. But, you know, look, we're talking about support for athletes. Largely what these universities view as support for athletes is money. They look at their supporters as people who give money, who buy tickets, who pay all that money in order to have the right to buy tickets. And when the teams do well and the players win, they are largely supported. When the teams lose, they are not supported. But the issue is bigger than just, if you cheer for them, then you've got to take this stance. It's way bigger than that.
I do think that Tom Herman was on to something, and he talked about hiring practices a bit, and that speaks to the systemic issues that you're talking about, Jay. But I also think that you brought up something that kind of sparked something in my mind, is the support that the universities offer these players so often, and it says not all players, so often they bring in players because of their athletic ability, obviously, and they take some players from situations where they have not been properly prepared to succeed at the college level. They bring them into these institutions and they find a way to keep them eligible rather than find a way to prepare them for life after. They find a way to get them in the classes they need to get so that they can stay on the field, and they take up so much of their extracurricular time with football-related activities or sports-related activities that they can't fulfill all the other things that a university promises. They can't pursue certain majors. They can't do certain internships. They can't do the things that they'll need to prepare them going forward. And we all know such a tiny fraction of the players actually play professionally. So I think that Tom Herman, while he's projecting this on the fans, he can turn around and look at the University of Texas also. And I can't speak to the research the data on how well Texas prepares their athletes for going life after football or life after basketball, but I can speak to my experience and what I've learned at so many other schools, that so many of the players come in, and when they're done with their 4 or 5 years of eligibility, they're no use to the school anymore, and they haven't prepared them. Even if they found a way to graduate, they're not prepared necessarily, and so many of them don't even graduate. So I think that Tom Herman is right to say to the fans, but Jay, you brought up the systemic racial issues, and that really sparked something in me to suggest that it's not just the fans cheering or not cheering or dating daughters or hiring people. It's also the institutions appreciating that they're mining from some of these areas where players have not been properly prepared, and they do nothing to prepare them going forward other than make sure that they can perform on Saturdays.
Oh, this is a wonderful conversation. We're up at the end of the show here, but Jay and Dominique, thank you both very much for your perspective on all of this, and it's a conversation that we will continue to have here, certainly, as we continue. And we'll go home. I mentioned that First Take is going to follow us here momentarily as Stephen A. and Max are getting set to talk about this and more, all the events of this weekend. That's in 5 minutes right here on ESPN. We are just getting started. What will be a very busy programming day here on ESPN as we wrap up Get Up for this morning. First Take is coming up in just a moment here, of course, for their usual 2 hours. That'll be followed by SportsCenter, then NFL Live, and then The Jump. Then at 4 o'clock, remember, you get 20-minute segments of Jalen and Jacoby, Highly Questionable, and Around the Horn. That is followed by a 2-hour SportsCenter at 5 o'clock Eastern Time. The PTI guys join in, Tony and Michael, with all of their reaction to this extraordinary weekend at around 5:30 Eastern, and then cap the day with SportsCenter with SVP. And then I'll remind you that tomorrow morning we have more Korean baseball for you. The first place Dinos starting a 3-game series against the Bears. That's tomorrow at 5:25 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and on the ESPN app. And I'll remind you that we come on as soon as that game ends. So Get Up will begin whenever the baseball game ends tomorrow for our usual 2 hours. I will see you then right here. First Take starts now.